This is what I said in Cleveland. Motzei Shabbos. And it's a great educational philosophy, so I thought it would be worthy to speak about. I know we've had open floor the last few weeks, so someone suggested it should... Can't have always open floor, because then it's like always the same thing, so I have to say something also. But I think this is really, really a... people were so... One parent told me he was so blown away by this, he never heard someone say this, so I just took it for granted. And so on the plane, I said that, you know, maybe the next time there's the opportunity, I'll present this idea. So it didn't take much twisting of my arm when someone came to me and said, maybe you should present something. I said, okay. but I think this is a great hashkafa. And happened to be on yesterday and this week's, past week's parsha. So the pasuk says, Vakol nishma beis paro lemor bo achi Yosef. And the word came to the house of Paro that the brothers of Yosef have arrived. Vayita veine paro veine avodav. And this was considered very beneficial to Paro and his avodim. So the Sforno says that Paro thought that from here on in, Yosef will be lo kashkochas germanig, not like a foreign leader, but rather avol kashkochas ezrach toshev l'shevetz ba'aretz. He'll be someone who is a resident ruling the land. And this way, he'll rule the land b'chol lev, with all of his heart, l'heitiv l'aretz l'yashveh, to do benefit for Mitzrayim and all of its inhabitants. So this is like a phenomenon. It'll be a good shmooze to say, but I'm not saying a shmooze now. Just as a hashkafa, you know, like, you have to understand, Yosef was doing everything for Mitzrayim. He saved the whole Mitzrayim. He interpreted the chalom, and he implemented everything going for it, and he mamash saved Mitzrayim. That's why he was in the position he was in. You know, was there anything missing? Anyone ever thought Yosef was lacking? And yet, when Paro saw that the brothers are coming, he says, ah, now Yosef's going to be able to help Mitzrayim, like a toshev, help everyone. Ah, now. We know the story of, you know, Mitzrayim without Yosef would have mamash collapsed. And yet, it made such a difference in Paro's mind that his brothers were here. So what will happen? Yosef's brothers are here, so now it's like family. We're like together, you know. When you do that dance with everyone shoulder to shoulder, I love doing that. You can't do that with just anyone. You don't go to a, you know, I like to say the torture of society. When you go to your wife's friends, you know, chasanas, lo aleinu. Always, this is recorded. You go to those chasanas, so it's like torture because you don't know anyone. Your wife's friend is getting married, so you don't know the chasan. At most, maybe you met your wife's friend one time. Okay, when you first get married, that happens a lot. Okay, in my situation, my wife got married like sort of earlier members of her class. So that's so many chasanas. Had I known that, I would have waited. It would have worth waiting. So you go to this chasana, and you don't know the chasana, you don't know any of the friends, and you're sitting at this table. Where do you think they sit you? You know, they sit you with all the people who have no place to sit. So you're sitting with all these, you know, foreigners around the table. You feel like you don't belong over there. And then, you know, a little bit you get to meet them because the next time you see this guy, another friend's husbands, you know, you can meet them at the next chasana. You said, oh, here we are again, a bunch of losers, you know, sitting there together. And one time I was sitting at this table with all the losers were at this table, and I came up with this, I did this chap that we were laughing hysterically. I said, you realize, you see the chasana over there, everyone's like dancing with him, and they're like there, he's being treated like chasana domel melech, hat on his shoulders, and he's having the time of his life. In a couple of weeks from now, there's going to be another chasana. He's going to be at this table. And he's not going to know any of us.
He's going to be more tortured than we will. We were all laughing. Like, this more constant thinks he's doing good. In a couple of weeks from now, you know, he's going to be in the dumps.
But you see how it is, you know, when you be able to, you know, you dance. You can't dance, you know, arm around shoulders by your wife's friend's class. You know, it's yet by close buddies, you could dance like that. So it's so important. This is what I was speaking about in Cleveland. It's so important for the Talmidim to feel like it's the yeshiva is their family. That's very important to have them feel like it's like a second home to them. The Rebbeim like they're, you know, close. Okay, you want to play like a father. I don't like to overuse that because it's, you know, I know Al Pi Musar it's the right relationship to have. I don't like saying that too, you know, in front of the fathers, like people like get a little nervous, like, what are you trying to do, take over my, you know, they may, like, trying to move in. However, it's like family, you know, they feel like it's close to home. And just because you will it to happen, just because you want it to happen, and you think it's a good thing to happen, doesn't mean it happens. Why should it happen? You say, okay, you're like my, you know, you tell the kids, okay, I hold to you, you're going to be like my children. And then you don't do anything. You try and be a good rabbi, a good teacher. But it doesn't happen. The life takes over. This kid comes late. This kid doesn't study. This kid's fashlofen. And then you try. Oh, welcome back, David. This kid's fashlofen. Oh, shit. This kid is, you know, did something wrong. This kid spoke disrespectfully. You have to follow up. You have to call the parents. Now what? You know, here you have to start disciplining. And then before you know it, you're 2 weeks into school, and you know you have to send home, call up, you have to send out a discipline report or a report card, and you write something. The kid gets very insulted. You know, one parent called me up this year. You know, you know what the Rebbe said. You know, Rebbe Pavlik, you're the Rosh Yeshiva. Tell me this is. You think this is appropriate? The Rebbe said that. Your son is succeeding my class, and I'm looking to motivate him even more. So, can you imagine he writes such a thing about my son? He says, "Wow." What do you mean exactly? So he says, "He doesn't know my son. My son is so motivated when he read that." He has no relationship. This Rebbe doesn't know. How do you expect him to have any respect for this Rebbe? He doesn't understand who my son is. Taka. Now here the Rebbe's trying to write something positive, and he, you know, the Rebbe wrote that he's doing succeeding, and I'm looking to motivate him even more. And the kid took it like he hates me, doesn't understand me, doesn't know me. It's like, here I'm just trying to show, like, it's not so easy. You want to make it like this family. Because it's really important. Even Yosef is going to conduct himself in Mitzrayim like on a totally different plane. The pasuk to write it, Vayitev Adar Ve'enei Paro. So, Vayitev Ve'enei Paro. So, that's got to be something worthwhile. And you can't even get to that level. How are you supposed to get to that level with the best of intentions? This Rebbe is in the doghouse. It's a taka problem. You know, sometimes, you know, the parents, they jump all over the Rebbe. I understood he was being a parent. To defend the Rebbe would only alienate me, you know, so I just, you know, didn't agree or disagree. I said, you know, you feel like your son is not understood. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, okay, you have to give it time. Then I spoke to Rebbe privately, as though they're very sensitive. I think you have to, you know, put your arm around them. But anyway,
it wouldn't help to explain the Rebbe. It meant well. He said a positive idea in the wrong way, but he meant.
I did try, but they weren't hearing that so good. Anyway, I have this. This is gold that I'm holding in my hands. Not much gold. And there's an author. There's an author, I think his name is Robert Mendler,
I don't know his first name. It's not Robert. And there's a book called Connecting with Students. It's the guru. This book is the guru of all, you know, the greatest ideas of how to create the relationship with a kid to get to this point where he feels loved and understood and motivated. And if you do some of the things that are on this, I got this from someone, and I showed it to Ray Feuerman, and he was thrilled that I had it. He gave it to me like 14 years ago. He has no copy of it. He said, "Wow, this is gold." Basically someone, I think it was a graduate student, a graduate doctoral student, went through the book and basically narrowed the book down to the best. Yeah, let's see. 19, you could add 19, 18, 37, and 16. What does that come out to? 53 of the best ideas. Let's go through some of them. Yeah, let's go through this. How many people are? I think we're one short. Yeah, pass around. But I gotta say one for myself. Yeah, pass it around. We'll look on. If you want a copy, we'll make you another copy. Just take one, pass it down. These are ideas how to build personal, academic, and social connections with students. It is unbelievable. And the teachers and Rebbeim who do it are stars. Stars. And they're not all intuitive. Now, it's not something you think of, but once you see it, they're no big deal to do it. Just to go through a personal connection. Let's just do one. Collect personal index cards. At the beginning of the year, many teachers give out index cards and ask the student to fill out many personal items on it so they can get to know the student. Include their birthdays so you can send home birthday cards and mention something in front of the class. The teacher should also tell them about him or herself. You know what that is when you wish a kid happy birthday? You have on your, you take it at the beginning of the year, now you don't need index cards. I have on my yeshiva has a birthday for every kid. So I had a Eliezer take that field and sync it with my phone. So every kid, nursery, base Spanish. I don't have base Spanish on it. You know, sorry. But nursery through high school, they have every kid's birthday pops up. Now, I always forget and remember, but if I would be good about it, or any Rebbe would do it, and every single time someone has the birthday, you know how meaningful it is? You go to them and say, you know, happy birthday today. Well, you know, how do you know if you get them something? It has to be something big. You get two cookies, you know, for your birthday. It's so unbelievable. The kids will remember you for the rest of his life. Just from that, you get so much information on the first day. You know where his parents are from, and then you know someone from that community. You make these personal connections with them, and you always have what to talk about. I always tell this story. I've told it before, but just in this way, the Reshiva was a genius. He didn't have much to go by. The Reshiva had hundreds of Talmidim. He took one piece of information, and he stuck with it. For Shiva, one time, I told the story already. One time, my brother and I, we had to get a JEP kid into camp. So we called Shiva at a parlor meeting. We found out that the director of the camp was at that parlor meeting in Teaneck, New Jersey. So we called Shiva to speak to the director. So Shiva went. That's when we put it together. Oh, let's call Shiva. He's there. He could speak to him. So we did a lot of, you know, went to the office. Called a few people, found out where the parlor meeting was. We called up the house. I think I called up, and I said, you know, this is Mordechai Palgan. It's very important that we speak to the Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Leibowitz. We understand he's speaking at this parlor meeting. So the person said, yes, sir. A minute later, the Rosh Yeshiva came to the phone and said, hello? You know, I think it's the only time I ever spoke to Rosh Yeshiva on the phone. Is everything okay? So I said, yeah, Rebbe, this is Mordechai Palgan. It's... there's a director of the camp. I started telling this, what? The director of the camp, there's a boy we have to get into camp. Could the Rosh Yeshiva speak to him? And he finally got it. But the next day, Reshiva came in. He came right over to me after the davening. He said, how did you know where the parlor meeting was? There were no cell phones back then. How did you know? I said, we made a few, phone calls. We found out. So for the rest of my life, every time I saw the Reshiva, every single time I saw the Reshiva, the Reshiva made like a motion, like, I can't hide from you. Like I would come to Sikha Shabbos, he would like start making like he was running in the other direction to try and escape from my, big brother claws. I found out where he was in Tinek. Just from one thing, the Reshiva was a genius at this. Make a personal connection. He found one. I don't say this disrespectfully, I say it very lovingly. One stupid joke Reshiva made for 15 years with me every single time he saw me. He made the same joke. And every single time it was funny. And every single time it warmed my heart that Reshiva remembered something personal about me. Like he didn't know what my birthday was. He didn't know lots of things. But he found one thing that he could relate to. And even I'm trying to bring a koach hatzir. Even if you only did one thing, it made such a roshan. But if you had a few things that you develop, it's like so powerful. Then you the Talmud feels like you know him, you understand him. You won't have a parent calling you up saying like he doesn't understand my son, And what did the Rebbe write? What the Rebbe did wrong is not what he wrote. What the Rebbe did wrong, if you want to call it that, is he didn't do one of these things early enough. He needed to do these things in anticipation of a report card or an interim report card. He needed to make some personal connections so the Talmud feels that he understands him. So he'll take it like, wow, my Rebbe said this. Like, you can take it better. So let's do another one. But that's a personal connection. I want to go through as much time as we have for it, but let's just you get a glimpse of all of them. Let's do an academic connection. That was personal. Let's do one, academic connection. Taking photos of the students and create an album. I don't like that one. Let's do number two. That's too complicated. Congratulate five... taking photos, album, too much work.
In the modern world, you can't take pictures of the students?
No, you could, but I don't know. No, it's work. I'm trying to do things that don't take time.
Is it written by a Jew?
No.
It says in 18, attend their bar mitzvahs.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Congratulate five students each class on something positive. It's a good idea to recognize what students do positively. Noticing even the smallest things can make the student feel good about what they have done and give them reason to keep up the good work. So I heard from an educator. I said, you have Yankel over there. He's always talking, always sleeping, never doing the work. What he says to compliment him on? He's not learning. He doesn't know what's going on. When he speaks up, he's only, cracking jokes and disturbing the class.
It means you have to find something.
So that's it. He said exactly. You have to find something that makes him feel that he could be complimented, something positive. So let's find something positive.
When he's sleeping.
Huh?
Oh, Yanko, thank you for not disturbing.
if that's all you can find. As long as he doesn't think you're being sarcastic.
Thank you.
Like we were learning today, like with David HaMelech, they told David HaMelech what's the onesh for Bol and Eshesish, and he said Chayev Misa, but the punishment for being Mevayish on the Rabbim is Ein Lo Chelek Olam Haba. And that doesn't sound like a good personal connection. Are we still talking about, I don't know what the cheshbon on that was. We don't know. But that would be something academic. You have to find Moshe, you said exactly right, find something academic. So this I asked Rabbi Feuerman, like, what would you say? We asked him for someone who's doing this and this. So listen, if he's, he's constantly disturbing, you can say, wow, Yankel, I see you have so much energy today. It's great to see someone with so much energy. You give life to the class. You could say that with a straight face. You have to
You can never be sarcastic.
It lets you feel sarcastic.
Never. You cannot.
Can you say that?
You cannot. You must get sarcasm out of your system. My first year, I was teaching. I was still a base manager guy, a cola guy. I was looking for all the good lines. And I was getting good, especially in Queens, when you have to contend with the likes of Rabbi Harris, or Shlomo Yosson Harris, who's amazing wit. So you can have he figured out how to do it. You can't make line. You cannot use sarcasm on kids ever, because everyone will laugh, including the kid. But the kid who has it done to him feels burnt and ridiculed and humiliated, and you have to get it totally out of your system. I remember the first year I was teaching. I remember in Queens, it didn't even occur to me that I was doing it. And my first year here, I quickly learned, you cannot do any. And I was still like, you almost have to get it out of your system. The earlier you can get it out of your system, the better. Like if anyone's a counselor in camp, or you're learning with a high school kid, like pay close attention not to do anything that's even remotely sarcastic, because that like pushes it away. Let's jump to a social one. We'll go back. I just want to give an example of each one. Okay, number one's too long. Number two, it's too juvenile. Number three, social connections.
That was talking about, like, a commonly missing academic, or even like Aaron's example about, like, my shirt, like that.
Well, academic connection means academics. Trying to find academic, it is important to say about the boy shirt. It is important to, in the, you have a question, I'll take it in a second. In the How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, so he has a one mice in there where he's going to a bank. Dale Carnegie is in a bank, and he's looking, and this teller is like, it's like long lines, and he's going, with this one, he's waiting in line. He says, when it's my turn, I'm going to make that teller feel like $1 million. He needs it. So. And he gets up there, and he says, "Sir, that's got to be the finest shirt or jacket I have ever seen. That's really fantastic." And the teller smiled, and he said, thank you very, very much." And he made the teller feel like $1 million. And then he writes in the book, like, someone asked him, like, "You're just doing flattery. You're just doing flattery to them." And I heard this taina on the book, and I heard it from Chashuva people, taina on the book. And I hold anyone who has that taina, it is in Svara a good taina, but not if you read the book. So the person who had that taina, I can't believe read the book. He writes beferish in the book that one should not do it simply for flattery. He bavarns that. You should not do a flattery. It was, what's wrong with making someone feel good? Isn't it appropriate? If you could, you do it with everyone. You can't always do it with everyone, but you have to know how to make people feel good. That's why we in the world together. We have to make people feel good. So that, yes, you shouldn't just do academic, because they need the social also. Yes.
If you feel that you don't really mean it, is it just better to stay away because sincerity is more important, or the reason why I'm doing it is because I want to make it feel good.
I'm laughing. I want to respond to your question. The question is, just for the recording, is should you give that compliment if you're not really sincere about it, or should you just keep quiet?
Which I assume.
So, if I can quote Rabbi,
because like let's take that example. It's not the nicest thing the guy's ever seen. So it can't be like
100%
sincere, but...
Okay, so just to quote Rabbi, I assume he would allow me to do this, say this in his name. To quote Rabbi Kaufman, Rabbi Eli Kaufman, who's the Rosh Yeshiva in Dallas, who's someone I admire and respect very much. He told me a good word. He said it b'shem his father. He said, "Sincerity is the most important thing. And if you can fake that, you got it made."
So just to pirish the dvar of Hakdoshim is that yes, you shouldn't say, you should not say things that I'm just saying without joking now. No, you shouldn't say things that are not sincere. You know, if you think it's the ugliest shirt you ever saw, you shouldn't say it's the most beautiful shirt I ever saw. Rabbi, who told me this? I think Rabbi Strassfeld told me today that he was in a shul, and the somebody was giving a drasha, and the three quarters of the place was sleeping. The guy next to him was sleeping, I was snoring, and when the drasha finished, the guy who was snoring woke up, and he woke up, and the guy goes, "Well, Shkoyach, this is the most beautiful drasha ever." So that would turn my stomach. You want to go over and give a person, you say Yashikoach, you say Yashikoach, because you give him a bracha, you gave a shir, you were not Zoha to fall asleep. But to say that, I don't think we say things that are not sincere. That doesn't sound like a right thing to do. You should say things that are sincere. But if you want to make, there's an inyan to make people feel good. You can be chesed for someone. Someone needs a tissue, you bring them a tissue. Someone needs to be uplifted, so you uplift him. How you uplift him? You tell him, "Wow, you have, green eyes." Green eyes or whatever. You say something, but find something that you really feel is good. Make him feel good. That should be sincere. If you can't be sincere about it, I hold that. Can you press the right one?
Right one.
Yeah. If you would say the same one.
So, in answer, Aaron, it's a good question. Yes, I don't think you should say it if you don't feel sincere. Find something that's sincere, and if you can't feel sincerity because you don't, then wait until you could feel it, then do it. And if you're in chinuch and you can't be sincere about it, what are you really asking? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Don't go into chinuch? Like, what's?
It's not if you're a very cynical person. You don't really. You have some people with very tough personality.
Which statement are we adding on?
No, when you asked, like, don't go into chinuch, it's like you're saying a person can't be sincere about anything. Like he doesn't. He really hates kids. That type of thing.
No, there are some people that are very tough.
Huh?
It's so easy to compliment people. Or like. Probably no one in this room is wearing the nicest shirt I've ever seen.
Well, that's a try. Look at number 11 on the personal connections. Moshe, should I take your question first?
Really quick.
Go ahead.
I just completely 100% disagree with number 15, making the nickname.
On personal?
Yeah.
On personal connections?
Depends what the nickname is.
No. Doesn't it? I don't care. If a kid doesn't like the nickname, why should the teacher choose?
Well, let you're right. If I started calling, I call someone you bags. That's not. I don't think that. I didn't take it to mean like that. But let's say I would call you, computer genius.
I feel like the guy should have
a
right to just say no.
We don't believe it says not to call people by, it's a good word, you don't have to call people by names, by nicknames. So you have to use a little chachm on that. Understandably. Because we don't really do that.
We're doing number 9? 15.
But, yeah, but was there another question I was in the middle of saying?
Number 11?
Yeah. Don't embarrass troublemakers. When someone is misbehaving, talk to them about their behavior and create signals between you and the student when he starts to misbehave. Number 11 on personal connections. Don't embarrass troublemakers. This is like so pashut that so many people, teachers, rebbeim, regretfully, you see. When someone is misbehaving, talk to them about their misbehavior and create signals between you and the student when he starts to misbehave. This is personal and can help build a relationship with your tougher students. It also keeps the class out of his business.
Are you saying privately? You should talk to him privately?
Yeah. You can make up a signal with a kid.
That kind of worse, though, because like other people in class sort of pick up on it, then they know we have personal conversations about this,
Well, let's look at this. When Okay, let's talk for sure a younger student.
Oh.
You know, he'll be embarrassed if you tell him to, like kids forget. So sometimes he gets antsy and fidgety. And when that happens, the best thing for him, after speaking to his parents or his therapist, is to like take out a book and just read and calm for 10 minutes. But he doesn't remember to do that. So instead of telling him, Yankel, I think it's time to take your book out, you just make a signal. And how would you like me to remind you that it's time to get a book? Oh, when I go like this, it'll be a reminder. So that would be a reminder of him, well, now I'll take out his book.
But how is he going to see you and not notice everyone else with their book out?
Yeah, you know,
the important part is
it's the respect. It's the
not the one telling it. And
yeah.
Take out your book. Yeah.
I've seen so many times where the problem is escalated
like that, they know.
20-fold, 100-fold because the kid felt embarrassed in the class. 100-fold. All the problems stop because the kid feels humiliated or embarrassed. And what the teacher or Rebbe did isn't the worst avera. You think it's like, by the way, a Rebbe halachically, you know, a Rebbe's allowed to hit a kid. Halachically, you know, he's allowed to hit a kid. The Mishnah Makkah says that a Rebbe who kills his Talmud b'shogeg, he's pater from galus, pater from Ari Miklat. If he was doing it b'kavona to be madrachim al piderech haTorah, he's pater.
Also, father.
Father also, yeah, he's pater from Ari Miklat. So a Rebbe's allowed to hit a kid. The Reshiva told me we had a maisa once where, who was I telling this to? I told this to you today, right? So there was a maisa where a Rebbe. I got this question. I was asked to ask the Reshiva this question: did the Rebbe do the right thing? The Talmud didn't think so. The onlooker Talmud asked me, but what happened was the Rebbe found a Talmud, it was a Beis Medrash Talmud, outside during Seder, and the Rebbe told the Talmud that this is not a country club. If you can't be at Seder, you don't belong here. You don't belong in the yeshiva. So the friends, his friends, who he was mortified. So his friends went over to the Rebbe and told the Rebbe that, you know, he was very hurt by what Rebbe said to him. And he was particularly hurt because there were high school kids around when Rebbe said that. And he said, like, if he knows he deserves it, he has to be more makbid on Seder, he was taking responsibility. But if we said it in private, it would be better. So the Rebbe said to the Talmidim, coming on his behalf, you think I didn't know that there were high school kids around? I waited 2 weeks to find him in that situation with high school kids so I could tell him at that moment when he'll get it that he has to be a tater.
Have meaning to it,
because he says he's told him other times he did that. He needed that. So,
Barabim,
yeah. So I asked the Rashiva, is it permissible to do? I might say he got angry, and the Rebbe was when he heard he was angry. The Rebbe was like very thrilled. Oh, and I got an emotion out of him. Good, that's good. He was even happier when he heard that it worked. And what? Of course I knew. I waited 2 weeks to find him in that particular spot. So I asked the Reshiva, I told him the exact story word for word I just told you.
Did you say the Rebbe's name?
I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I did. I don't know if I should have, but I did. I told the Reshiva. So, and I was driving the Reshiva and back from Achasen, I think. I asked him this question, is this permissible to do? And the Reshiva said, a Rebbe has to be Madrach his Talmud, and he's allowed to be Mevayish a Talmud, even Barabim, if he feels that's what the Talmud needs. If that's what he feels the Talmud needs, he's allowed to do it, Mevayish him, even Barabim. That's what he says. And then the Rebbetzin, Aleh HaShalom, who was sitting in the back seat, yells, but the Reshiva would never do it. That the Reshiva didn't want to say anything. As you see, the Reshiva is godless. He wouldn't say anything against the Rebbe to me. And that's why I say I'm embarrassed. I shouldn't have told the Reshiva who the Rebbe was.
And then he fired.
No.
Do you think his answer would be different if you didn't say
no? I think the Reshiva says it straight all the time.
We disagree. You can't.
He said it straight. He wasn't. Reshiva was not political, and I think that the Reshiva may have been a little bit more, a little critical that you could, but I don't know if you should have, But the Rebbetzin, she was more blunt than the Reshiva, and the Reshiva would never do it. That's what she told me. So, and the Reshiva did not argue. So I take it from that yes, the Rebbe is not in Lochel Golomab, he's allowed to do it. But, I think in the Slabodka yeshivas that we have being introduced to, it's less done. I can't say it's not done. You hear stories. I can't vouch for it because to me it makes no sense. And all my rebbeim taught me that you shouldn't do that. But if you want to halachically, is it permitted? Halachically it's permitted.
What about
Moshe? Yeah.
Rabbi Yachnas, I was learning
Rabbi
in camp a few years ago, and I was speaking to Rabbi Yachnas. So he told me that he spoke to, I forgot which gedolim. I think it was two different gedolim, three. And he asked him if there's ever a situation where you're allowed to embarrass a student. And the gedolim told him no. Does that sound familiar?
It makes no sense to embarrass your students. It doesn't make sense to do that because it's a turnoff. It doesn't work. I assume Bizman, the gedolei Hadar, the times of the Mishnah, you could do that to be Madrach Talmud. Sometimes you have to do things that are embarrassing.
So, saying whether or not it's halakhic.
I assume.
It's not an advisable thing to do in most situations.
Nowadays, almost all situations, but try and protect the dignity. I think the book is. There are two books, Connecting with Students, and the other book by this author is Discipline with Dignity. We don't need a secular author to, but the ideas in here are absolutely gold. I mean, you'd have to read a 300-page book to get this out. It's really just phenomenal things. There are things in here, there are some of them in our yeshiva that they do, some of them do instinctively, but I don't want to say any names. There's one Rebbe who took this document, and he does it routinely. There are boys at graduation speak about. There's one Rebbe who, Rebbe, you know who it is. I don't want to say his name on the recording. He writes their names down before Yom Narayim, and he davens for his talmidim before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He davens for them, and you see him davening for them. It's a big Kiddush Hashem, and they know it and they feel it, and he does it sincerely. You can't just say, I got this, a good one I could do. I'll get them to feel good that I'm going to take their names. But if you're really going to do it and you really mean it, that's such a beautiful thing, and a dama for them. You do things.
There's a story with Rabbi Kalish. He one time heard that he had a student in his class that wasn't connecting so well with, and he heard that he was very into hockey. He found out that he actually goes to hockey classes like an hour away from yeshiva. Rabbi Kalish shows up to his hockey practice/game, and forever on they were best friends. That's the story. So then I was thinking about the story a few weeks ago, and I heard that But if I did it, it would be so fake, though. Because I'm only doing it, like when Robert Kalish did it, like it was so real. Like he wanted to create a relationship with him, and like he found something the kid was into, and he showed up at his hockey game, and like he made the kid. But like, if I did it, and if I did like a lot of these things, it would just be like, oh, when's your birthday? Well, your birthday is, so I'm only doing it to create a relationship. It's totally not natural. It's like,
look at number 14 on page one. I did this routinely. Ask students for feedback or suggestions. There should always be two-way communication between an educator and the students. This way you understand how they feel and can improve your class based on their feedback and make a more successful experience with them. On every single test, I would put down on the back of the test feedback questions. How would you like? It's not a big deal, but then you get to say, sometimes your class is going too slow, sometimes your class is going too fast, sometimes you need to change chavrusas, and how do you know? You're not so smart to figure it all out yourself. The kids will tell you, you know, how to make your class good. And they say, oh, there's, you know, these too many guys are distracting the class, and then you just, oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's a good point. So one of the best reasons to give a test, because like it's a little cheesy to just give out feedback questions one day, but at the end of a test, I give extra credit points for it. As you can get, I'm paying them, so to speak, to write the feedback. So they don't just leave it blank because they're not in the mood. They want to go to lunch. You're getting 2 points a question. You ask 2-3 questions, I can afford the 4 or 5 points. And I they give you the best feedback. And they feel like you're listening, especially if you implement the things that they write, or you write for them, thank you so much for this information. And also, before I give back the tests, after I grade them, I read to the whole class. You could check if you don't want yours read, but it's anonymous, and I read back all the everyone's feedback to the class. Everyone hears everyone's feedback, and they all try and guess who said what. You know,
that. Yeah.
Because it's a way to have them feel that you're listening to them. It's one of the listening techniques is when you repeat over what the person says.
That you're listening?
Yeah. Even if you didn't even do anything, you just repeat what they said. I just read what they said. It makes them, you know, I did read it because I put a check next to it and I wrote +2. But when I actually took the time in class to read what they wrote, that's
more of a favorite impression.
Yeah.
Let's say you do the same thing, you just go over to the kid and discuss with them what you wrote. Like similar.
Yeah, but time is a very big factor. Like, when you're teaching a class, okay, so if you want to talk to a Talmud X, okay, at 12:30, he's on a beeline for lunch. And at 1 o'clock, he's got to be in his math class. So you have to sort of chop him. Now, you have your own things to do because you have to run off a test, you have to write a test, you have to hand in your grades, there's a Rebbe meeting. You promise this one, you have to call this parent. There's a psychologist coming to talk about this one. You have a myriad of things to do. That's not talking about you taking your kids for carpool. And like the Rebbe's lives get very complicated because, like, I saw this cartoon, this, you know, CEO of a company who's, you know, maybe the owner of the company, and old, fat, you know, 70-year-old sitting behind his desk, piles of folders coming in, and then he summons his secretary to come in, and she walks in, you know, looking frazzled with a pad, and he says, "It has come to my attention that you have a personal life."
Yeah.
Like, people don't realize that, you know, behind every Rebbe there's, you know, his wife and a whole family, and no one ever sees that part of how's he juggling all that. You know, he's here all day, he's got kids in school, he's got his wife is working. What happens if one kid gets sick? Who's taking the kid to the doctor? You know, not every family gets a Rebbe Dietsch to do all the, you know, taking care of everything. You know, we have a family of how many kids in the dorm, high school dorm? I know there are 15 kids, so, okay, he's got 15 kids, but between 9 and 5, or 9 and 9, or 9 and 11 a.m. and p.m., he's taking care of, but every family doesn't usually get that, you know, unless they happen to have parents or in-laws that live in the neighborhood. It's a big advantage, you know, but if you don't have that, like, it's a lot of juggling to do. So you're right. What Shmuel said is really the best thing, to speak to each kid privately, but
time becomes a very big factor. So I would really reserve that for that was a really special need comes up. I know we put onto the calendar, and you know, wasn't 100% successful, but we put onto the calendar Rebbe Talmud Conference Week, where Rebbe teacher Talmud Conference Week. That week, same way you have parent conferences, that Rebbe has to make a conference with every kid. Now that's like we had to put it into the calendar just to do what you just said. Well, that's once a year to speak for 10 minutes. Now you get kids on the fly, but you know how it is when you make a, you know, it's like a married couple. They have to sometimes schedule a date just to get 2 hours to be alone, to go out, just not to deal with the doctor and the bills and the this and the that. Just have some special time. So yeah, that happens with all the Talmidim. You have to talk to this one about this and about that. But when do you have a time to really concentrate on them, on how they're doing? Let's just talk it through.
No, 14,
give feedback.
14 I like. It's number 1 and 2. And
on what? I want personal?
Personal connection. Just like,
yeah. Well, I just read 14.
Yeah, so 14 I like, but 2...
Before you go on.
Smile and say good morning?
Sorry. Rafe Hellberg does, he schedules 1 or 2 meetings a week to meet with everyone 5-10 minutes just right after lunch, right when lunch starts. And
okay, Rabbi Pellberg, Shlita, is, Rabbi Pellberg is, you understand, is one in 10,000.
Yeah.
Because he has total discipline over himself, and every minute in his life is calculated. So he, at the beginning of the year, said, this is what I'm going to do, and he can do that for 10 months straight and never miss one time. He's Rabbi Pellberg. He's an amazing person. There are, I'm telling you, 1 in 10,000.
Yeah?
Yes.
How they got lucky.
Okay. Yes, you got lucky. You know, there are very few people who are so disciplined to keep that. It's very rare. I mean, I know another 1 in 10,000. There are a lot of 10,000s out there. But there is a couple of them. But in every bunch, you don't have... You don't have 2 in every yeshiva like that. I mean, you're lucky if you have 1.
Aha, they have a gold feather and a color.
Okay, so yeah, it's very, very special. You know, I mean, yeah. Yes.
Academic number 13.
Yes.
We're about to do personal questions, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mayor. Go ahead. Smile and say good morning.
Yeah. So... 3, I hear there's a difference between 2 and 3, because 3 is more like you're just acknowledging their existence, but like, but two is more like, if you're just going over the people and saying good morning, there is that classical like thing that Talmidim do make fun of the Rebbeim about like good morning, you know, he just says good morning, like he's just saying it because it'll come across fake, and if it's not real, like a lot of these things could come across fake. And it's just something I think.
Right.
Speaking of that, so it's like funny. It's not like a checklist like how to make relationships. The way to make
no,
relationships.
No, it's not something. These are just ideas. You could do none of them or all of them. You have different things. If you feel that doesn't work, but
speaking of Ray Palbert,
you know,
he spoke about this once.
he always adds
someone's name after, so not just like. Everyone goes around Friday afternoon, good Shabbos, Shabbos, and then you would have the names after, and then that way it feels so much more personal.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just interrupting.
Yes.
Yeah, an academic number 13.
13. Chaperone, that one?
Academic.
Oh, I'm sorry, academic 13. Okay, let's take a look. You guys are sorting through this. You're going to have this whole thing on your fingertips. 13. Plan lessons, that one?
Yeah.
Based on your least capable students. When you plan in this manner, you avoid the chance of losing students. You'll have a higher percentage of successful students who understand the lesson. Well, every time you plan a lesson, you're supposed to make a behavioral objective, which would mean to chart the skills that you're teaching that lesson. Let's say you're teaching Tosfos, you know, Achas Ishto. Okay, bottom of Beis Menachem, right?
and you want to teach that Tosfos today. So, and you're teaching, let's say, ninth grade. Okay, so, and before you teach that Tosfos, you know, what do they need to know before you do that Tosfos? So, now, if you're teaching third year base Medrash year, so do you have to teach them what Achas Ishto means first? You know, let's say you're teaching it now in January. I assume everyone knows what Achas Ishto is. You have to teach them what Nida is. You probably know what Nida is, okay? You have to teach them what Nesra is. Okay, probably maybe a couple of guys may not remember what Nesra is, so okay, I can go over Nesra. You have to teach them what Chalitza is. Yeah, no, they all know what Chalitza is. Okay, so now I know there's two guys, I made that chart, all the skills that you need to know before I teach that Tosfos, and I made a chart, and I know, okay, two guys may not know what Nesra is. Before I start the shiur, I'm just going to explain what this is. I'm going to just say, just to remind everyone, someone remind me what Nesra is, just to make sure everyone knows, and someone will say, okay, now you've done it, now you can teach the Tosfos. You're teaching ninth grade that Tosfos for the first time. Okay, you may have to first teach what Nida. I remember when I was learning ninth grade. The Rebbe, true story. Okay, the Rebbe asked us, which is not the way to do it, but he asked us, you know, do you know what Nida is? So I thought I knew, but it turned out I didn't. So I was very naive. So I said, yeah. So, okay, so what is it? So I said, it's like something with your brother or your sister, the brother or sister. I was so confused. I don't know if we're learning this, we didn't learn Tosfos, but I know I said, Nida is Chayv Karis, and that's Chayv Karis. I thought Nida was like, that's what I said. I didn't know anything. So I remember him saying that. If I remember the story, it's like, let me tell you, I feel like really stupid, you know, but he was a great Rebbe, but he didn't make the behavioral objective, he didn't go through the chart to figure out what everyone knew, what they didn't know.
Why is it called behavioral objective?
I don't know, I don't know why it's called that. But it's a, you know, you make, you know, you're
supposed
to discipline.
Cater to the bottom of the class?
Well, no, You want to make sure everyone's going to know. And he's giving a whole shiur, and you're doing Tosfos Achas Ishto, you can do it, and you never explain what Nida was, and they don't know what it is.
When it comes to actual shiur, when you're giving the shiur, what level do you give it on?
Give it on a high level, but that's
and
not. I was giving pshat in this.
Either way, to
make sure that you don't assume they know things that they don't know.
If you give the shiur,
2 minutes later, when you start giving the shiur, they're okay. They know what chalitza is.
Right, you have 45 minutes to teach Tosfos Achas Ishto, right?
Yeah.
If you do in that time span, there's the bottom five kids in the class won't follow. There's no chance if you again, it's been a lot longer for them. So does that mean that you should split it out over 2 days for them, or right?
Well, you have a responsibility to all the talmidim. So not the smartest kids aren't more entitled to learn than the weakest kids. So you have to do what's best for, I guess, the majority of the class. Right? Agreed. And if majority of the class, you have to teach majority of the class, so like, I guess, you know, you're obligated to teach all the class. So everyone's got to get it. So you have to figure out, sometimes you're going to have to differentiate a little bit. You have to cater, make sure that the strongest kids don't get bored, and you have to make sure that the weakest kids can follow. So it's a juggling act to constantly, you know, and there is such a thing called differentiated instruction, where you actually learn how to present material that can be adjusted to the strongest and to the weakest, which is a really fantastic skill
the
same material. To adjust it for the weakest and the strongest in the same classroom. So obviously, the greater disparity, the more skilled you have to be. And most teachers and Rebbeim are unskilled because they, you know, special ed is how I taught by Rabbi Foreman. Special ed is just means better ed. So I would, you would want to get a teacher who has a degree in special ed, because anyone with special ed means they're special ed really is better ed, because those children who need special ed need a more skilled teacher, educator, so they need to be trained and skilled. So someone with special ed is really better ed. It's a good thing to always remember. Special ed is better ed. So just because a kid needs, he's in a special ed school, it means, okay, those teachers are really good. You get someone with a degree in special education, so, you know, they're probably better teachers.
Did she ever hire a special education teacher for a regular class?
We would. If you, yeah, well, we'd love to do it.
Try to do that or not? Because I feel like most of them just teach in like research rooms or whatever it is.
Most of them teach in like resource rooms.
Yeah,
yeah, because that's where the money is. People teach special ed, they want to use their degree. So you know, they're looking.
You bet some use it in the class also.
Yeah, of course. But you won't get paid special for it, and you also have a skill, so you want to use it for the people who really need it. Like, you know, it's like someone who's a nuclear physicist. Oh, awesome! He's a nuclear physicist. He's probably make a very good fifth grade math teacher. So yeah, he could. It'd be great. Better to get a nuclear physicist to teach your fifth grade math because he really knows his stuff. But he wants to do nuclear physics. Huh? You know. So. Okay. So.
Isn't this good for parenting?
The last thing. Okay, we wind up. I don't keep guys late.
I mean, isn't this good for parenting also?
Yeah. Monitor bid interactions carefully. A teacher should constantly be watching the students to make sure they don't hurt each other with disrespect, language, put downs, or other demeaning comments or actions. Every minor infraction should be dealt with. So, every minor infraction.
Well,
this
is every minor class where kids are making fun of each other.
Okay.
How are you supposed to teach kids to solve problems for themselves if you're
One of the mission statements, I heard this from my brother, and in our middle school, one of their, I don't know what you call it, bylaws or one of their constitutional edicts that they live by is that every act of bullying, every act of reported bullying will be followed up on. They will not ignore not one act of bullying. They tell this to the kids and to the parents. I heard them at the open house. We follow up on every act of bullying, and we do not subscribe to the rule or the law that boys will be boys. We don't buy into that. So if your son, you know, he tells you something, report it to us, we will follow up. And if your son is the one involved in the bullying, you know, do not tell us that boys will be boys. We do not subscribe to it, so that's unacceptable excuse. We will follow up on every single one. Now, I was at that open house. The parents were like whispering to each other afterwards. You know, they loved that. You know, they felt that their kids now safe. is going to be safe in that environment because, you know, he got up there, and that's a bold statement to make. We will follow up on every single reported act of bullying in this school until we can eradicate it. But, you know, if you don't get, you know, reports of bullying, it means the kids are always, because kids, boys will be boys, you know, so there's always bullying going on, but the point is it's being followed up on. So you have a kid who got bullied, okay, but when he reports it and you do something about it, then you turn it into, you know, a mechanism of teaching, because I know kids are sometimes nasty to each other because boys will be boys, but you don't take that as an excuse. As you recognize that that's happening, and therefore you're going to follow up, and no one's telling it to you, means you're doing a bad job making people feel comfortable coming forward. So
I hear that perspective when you say any reported bullying, but in a regular classroom, in a high school classroom, and there's hundreds of comments, insults, back and forth, people are very negative. Every comment, the teacher's going to spend 3/4 of the day. No, we can't. We don't say that. No, you maybe hurt his feelings. I asked you already 3 times.
No, if Rebbe's doing that, he needs to be in a special ed room.
We have to determine if the comment teacher reacts. If every comment teacher reacts, it shows that there's like a certain
I want to respond to Yehuda. I really think we should go on. Believe me, I could stay. I would stay up for 3 hours to discuss this. This is like closest to my heart. So we'll continue next week. Bez Hashem. It's a great topic. But I just want to just finish. Yeah.